Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Brains, Bibles, and Beyond. Woo-hoo. So we are going to continue our conversation that we're having with Brandon, and this is going to be part two, part 2A, because we had to split part two in half because it was a little long.
Super huge.
So just a reminder, this is a conversation, not a debate. There are obviously some questions and some points that were not brought up, some discussionary topics that we don't even approach, because... Yes. We're not trying to necessarily win a debate. We're trying to learn from each other. Brandon and Joel and I obviously disagree, and that is stated up front. We know this, and we generally are trying to learn from each other, and we want to demonstrate how people who disagree can have a conversation and actually learn.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So that's the approach we're taking with this, and obviously, there's some questions that, you know, we could have asked or would like to have asked, and we didn't even bring those up, and Brandon as well. And so we just want to state that and make sure everybody's clear on the purpose.
Every great conversation, you're going to have people biting their lips at some point. You know, you're not going to say everything. You're not going to say it right away. So we just try to demonstrate that, because it's a lost art of people being able to have a real conversation with people we disagree with. Definitely.
So anyway, this is part two. Enjoy, and we'll see you at the end.
Grab some of the coffee first while you enjoy.
So good. All right, so we are here with our friend Brandon, and he is a science teacher up in Minnesota. And Brandon, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and the nonprofit that you run?
Oh, well, it's I make a lot of money off of it compared to what you'd expect, because it's not actually a nonprofit. A company called Science is Weird. We are at the beginning stages of rebooting the third grade through 10th grade science curriculum. We are making it more interesting and more wonderful. I will say as interesting and wonderful as the world, the universe deserves. And because of that, I am in the situation where I get to talk to people who have not yet discovered how awesome the beautiful basics of geology, paleontology, biology, physics, chemistry are. And I get to just geek out with people about that. Yeah. So that's what I do.
So just to set the stage, Brandon and Joel and I, Joel and I agree on the origins of the universe. Brandon would disagree, has a different point of view. And part of this discussion is just so we can communicate with each other. But one thing that we all have in common is our pursuit of the truth. That's why Brandon is a science teacher. He wants truth to be known, and he wants to discover what the truth is. And he wants to help other people with that pursuit. And we can all agree with that as our end goal. And we all want to find out the truth. We want to seek the truth. That's why I have my shirt on. That way, my youth conference, seek truth.
I got your Pickle of Christ Ministry.
Branded.
I feel left out, actually, right now.
So that is our common ground. We're coming from different points of view, different perspective, and we're going to be discussing this. Mostly Joel and Brandon will be discussing it. I'm just kind of here to ask dumb questions and help moderate along as needed. So, or stop arguments or fights if we have those. But hopefully we don't have any of that stuff. Even if Joel does send random mistyped emails that appear to be mean. So
this is true story from recent events. Yeah.
So anyway. why don't we get started? So let's just remind everybody what we were discussing when we ended last time. So Joel, why don't you just kind of remind us of some of the questions that we wanted to come back and answer?
Okay. First off, we want to make sure we understand, the audience understands what our intentions are, you know, the objectives, the goals, you know, these sort of things. And so Brandon and I, we've gotten to know each other a bit here, more and more, and we really appreciate each other and just our quest for truth and friendliness. that's been a wonderful thing, refreshing. And one of the big things we want to do is, you know, we both kind of noticed in the world that when people disagree, they can have a very hard time having a conversation. And so we want to showcase, essentially, one of the big goals is to showcase how to have a conversation knowing you disagree, no surprise, and 99% chance we're still going to disagree. I mean, that's what we understand to be true. It's always that 1%, right? There's always that 1%, right? But the because that's where because we're open to truth, right? So that's but we're not newbies necessarily with some topics, right? But not in the general sense. And so we just want to disagree well. I think that's a lost art. And so then, of course, with these kind of conversations, they can be so broad. They can go in so many different directions. We did want to narrow it down. That way we can stay a little more focused. It can be a little more helpful. And that way we're actually finishing up ideas and things before we're going on to something completely different. Is that fair, Brandon? You think so?
Absolutely, and let me encourage you, like before we jump from any topic to any other subtopic in this, ask me, like, have I shifted my views? If you feel like you've got me, like you feel like you've actually like put my feet to the fire, and I hope to help you put my feet to the fire. Please ask me if I've shifted at all in my confidence of my belief. I feel like there's a 99% chance that I will come out of this conversation with some piece of my intellectual structure changed.
Well,
That's fair.
that's a really good attitude coming in. I appreciate that. Yeah, so I always hope to learn, even with people that I'm not you, but even people that I would be totally opposed with, you know. I often find that I can still learn and grow from having that back and forth, whatever it may be. And even, a lot of times, I think Brandon would agree, a lot of times it can be an ugly exchange. And I can learn from that, even what might trigger somebody or something like that. There's always something to learn, always something. So that's I really appreciate that. So audience, you out there, yeah, have that same open mind, learning and seeking truth, and that'd be awesome. Okay, so we want to kind of start at the ground level, and a little bit of a pun there, but start at the ground level here. We're looking at the fossil record. And so we do want to make sure we are defining terms, explaining things so everyone can understand. And so essentially the idea, you dig down, you're driving by cliffs, something like that. You'll see these layers, right? And there's stuff in the layers. And you dig down, there's stuff in the layers. Very specifically, we are looking at the fossils that are in these layers. And we are looking at all this. And of course, something happened before we were born. And so we're trying to figure out, well, looking at the evidence, what is actually in front of us, what can we learn? What kind of theories can we use? What kind of models can we use to try to identify how this came to be? And we Brandon and I both are using different models. We're working with different information, but I don't think there's anything necessarily secretive, that's another big thing, a little bit of a misnomer that sometimes people think there's some kind of like secret locker room of evidence or something. No, we're looking at the same things. It's all out there. And it's we're just coming at it from two different perspectives. And so that's what we're looking at. We're trying to limit it to that scope and trying to discuss what is there, how it got there, and more specifically with that, what could be the best explanation. And sometimes we can find things that aren't necessarily bad, but we're seeking for what is the best, to the best of our ability. Now, would you agree with all that, Brandon?
Yeah, absolutely, and really well
Okay.
stated as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think in both of our interests, I think it's good to remind ourselves of, the scientific method, the pursuit here. Think of Francis Bacon, way back 16th, 17th century around there. And he had a series of experiments. He collects data and uses that stuff to form conclusions, right? It's stuff that is observable, testable, repeatable. And that's what we're going for. And of course, you're working with theories to get to that point, right? You have to start with hypothesis and whatnot. And so, but that is the method. And so not just pulling stuff out of our hats. This is all, coming from somewhere at least. So I'll tell you what, I will allow you, Brandon, to go ahead and speak first on this. Go ahead and you start however you'd like, whatever you think is best. And
Sure.
then I can speak to that and we'll just get moving from there.
Sure. So I guess the big thing is that people are really interested in this, right? This debate. We're not having a debate, but like this fight, this disagreement we have specifically because of the question of evolution. But way before Darwin hatched his idea of natural selection as the engine that drives evolution, even before people were really excited about, right, we think that evolution occurs in these other ways, there was this understanding that there were different chapters in the history of the world. And evolution came along to try to explain why is it that we have these different animals that seem to be living at different times. What's interesting is that this understanding of different chapters in Earth's history came about first by people who were young Earth creationists, who started as young, well, started as Orthodox Christians, who were not seeking to disprove the Genesis story, who actually believed these ideas in harmony, they thought, with the Genesis story. And one of the things that they found was that we see these layers of rock, and you can see these layers of rock all different parts of the world, and they form these coherent giant hills. And when you look in these different layers of rock, you find different kinds of fossils systematically all of the time in different layers. So much so that if you find out near your house what kind of what layer of rock that you live in, you can predict exactly what kinds of animals you're going to find there. So this doesn't then make It's hard. I don't know how, Joel, you make sense of this, given a flood catastrophist view of the rocks. And here, let me actually just jump back to my pretty picture and say that. So I want like our conversation that we're, the thing that we're disagreeing about, it's not evolution versus creation. And it's not, I think, even like young Earth creationism versus anything else. It's specifically the question of how were the sedimentary rocks, right? Which is most of the rocks that we see around us that weren't caused by volcanoes or something. How were the rocks actually formed? Were they formed all at once in one big mix? Or were they formed as muck that then got squished into rock, as more muck that got squished into rock, as more muck that got squished into rock? And just to put it in a picture, right? So, like, here is North America, which is one giant hill. Also, all of the continents are one, giant hills. But it seems to me that if all of these were formed at the same time, you should find, trilobites in every layer, really ancient before the dinosaurs, right? According to the standard model of this, you should find T-Rexes in every layer. You should find saber-toothed cats in every layer. What's interesting is that you never find saber-toothed cats in the bottom blue layer or in the middle green layer. You only find saber-toothed cats in the top layer, and you only find T-Rexes and other dinosaurs in the middle layer, and you only find these weird ancient sea bugs, right, in the very bottom layer. Any understanding, I guess any, I feel like any explanation that says, any commitment to saying that these are all formed at the same time has to give us some hope for explaining why are these found only in these very exact layers. Yeah, I guess that's what I got.
Okay. And I appreciate your beautiful drawing there. Hopefully you spent less than a week on coloring it in and
When I go big or go home, when I got started on those pictures, I really invested myself in making that as pretty as possible. Yeah.
Oh, it is nice. It is nice.
It's embarrassing to say. Yeah.
I do like it. It's nice.
I love it. I think it's great.
So
I mean, it illustrates the point perfectly.
Thank you.
I gotta pick a little bit, but it is nice.
Whether I agree or not, it still illustrates your point perfectly.
So
So
I'm curious to know, Nate, whether then you like disagree about the explanation or about like, do you think that they're not actually found in these layers? Because I feel like those are two different paths that we could converse down, and I'd be happy to do either of those. Or can I
another
make that
point of
easier
view.
for you?
Yes.
So there's two things. So at one point in my life, I was a young Earth creationist, and when I was in high school, and that's actually what got me into geology and some of the other sciences too. So I really owe a lot to sort of like the debate, the conflict between these two radically different models of looking at the world, which is part of why I love this. And the thing that got me to stop being a young earth creationist is, tell me if you think that I'm wrong about this. I feel like it ultimately comes down to a conspiracy theory that you would need a giant worldwide conspiracy of scientists who are saying that, well, we should find these in these different layers. But then when they find the bones in different layers, they're either like burying them again or they're lying, they're taking them to other places and saying, oh, actually, I found this right here. Or they're smashing them with hammers. So I feel like a good way of making it not just like my opinion on this would be to say, we could actually make a monetary bet right now, right? Like we could put money on the line for this and say, when the next T-Rex fossil is found, where do we, it's an ugly color. When the next T-Rex fossil is found, where do we think it will be found in, right? Because T-Rex fossils are a big deal. They actually get in the news. I am willing to bet $1,000 to both of you right now, and I can donate that $1,000, not to, I can give it to you too, but I can donate it to any charity of your choice if it is found in any of this layer or this layer. In fact, I'll even go farther than that. I'll say that like the middle layer, the dinosaur layers, right, are the Triassic, the Jurassic, and the Cretaceous. If we find a T-Rex fossil in here or in here or in here or in here, I will give $1,000. And I will take this with a $10 bet on the other side. That if I win, you only owe me $10. But if I win, I owe you or a charity of your choice $1,000. So if you want to make some money off of me, Nate, right now, this would be a fantastic way of doing it.
Yeah, I'll
Don't
take
do it.
that bet.
Don't do it. No, don't do it. Don't
No.
do it. Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it.
No. So,
Okay.
yeah, no, I mean, this the presentation's nice. I mean, it makes sense what you're saying. The graphic may, I mean, I get the point you're making here. Like I said, I've never studied what layer anything's in. Like, I know there's fossils and I know there's layers, and I never pay attention to where they're at. Joel, on the other hand, he does study this stuff, so I'm hoping he has a point of view that makes more sense. So, to me, I mean, I would never, or most people would never, I mean, I wouldn't take anyone's just word. I mean, I would have to study before I ever change a mind. But to me, I mean, you're saying that these layers have to be sequential in time, and I would say, yeah, they probably are. But I think that time was a lot more rapid than you do. You think it's over, millions of years. I think it would happened in, could have been in hours even.
Sure,
Now,
sure, sure.
how, it came to be that the animals are only in certain layers, I have no idea. But that doesn't mean it couldn't have happened more rapidly.
I'm not committed to millions of years. I'll only say different chapters of Earth's history. And then we need to try to figure out why are like they're very different types of animals and different layers. Joel, this is your podcast. Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I was gonna say something else, but you made me really just super curious there for a moment. I just like to clarify that for that was really interesting. With the time, how, because you said you're okay with letting go of millions of years. That's okay. But how quickly do you think that those layers could have come down?
So
Like,
I
what's the
don't,
range that
yeah,
they could
so
have come down?
this would be like a great like question for a professional geologist. I know that I think it was Charles Lyell in the, what is that, 1700s, one of the founders of modern geology, who this is pre-evolution, right? He was a creationist, who did not think that animals came from each other naturally, right? Thought that God created them. When he went through this and tried to figure out, okay, like how quickly, like what is like the minimum layer of this? I think I read that he came up with 300,000 years. So I guess that would be my take on that. I do need to say that like I really am like an evolutionist, right? Like I have been convinced of the truth of evolution, like basically in the way that Charles Darwin said it worked and all that. But I'm taking that, I'm prescinding that, I'm cutting that out and throwing that over there because I recognize that like when we have a conversation that are between two very different camps, it's usually a good idea to be as specific as possible and then to like let everything else fall to the side. So for anybody who's watching this right now and they thought, oh wow, like this guy, the science teacher, doesn't seem to believe in evolution. He's willing to give up the idea of millions of years. I'm willing to give up everything, right? Because I take science seriously and I want to just in this conversation focus on the narrowest, the most that we could potentially agree on when we are just talking about this one thing about layers. I don't know if any of that made any sense.
It did. No, it makes sense. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so then what, like, there's catastrophes like Mount St. Helens and things where you have something like, 25 feet of sediment laid down in hours. So are you okay with that kind of thing, being in the fossil record?
Of course, that's mainstream ge yeah, that's mainstream geology, of course. Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. I'm just glad that even clarifying that for everyone else. That's really awesome. Okay. So then what I was going to originally say before I got interested in what you recently said. So I was, can you bring up your graphic again, please?
Yes,
If you would
I
not mind.
can. I do not mind. Give me just a moment.
That's okay. That's all right. And so
Clicking
yeah,
these
as you bring that
things.
up here, I just want to talk a little bit about the graphic representation, not pinpointed at yours, just in general, but I think it just helps to have yours up because you did do a good job with it. And I think it's a fair representation of what's normally out there, what's normally shown. And so I like that. And so what I wanted to show is that, usually when we're looking at the geologic column, okay, we're looking at a graphic representation. This is something that usually, like you have done, and actually you've done it better than what I've seen in some other places as well. But it's kind of just a graphic representation of an idea. So I think how it's done, and you could disagree with me at any point here. But that would be that they would look at lots of local areas, as we do different digs, different places all around the world, things like that. We pull a lot of local information and we put it all together to make kind of this composite picture of the Earth. Is that fair?
Yep, absolutely correct. It's a jigsaw puzzle, would be a phrase, a frame for this, yeah.
So what I've seen here with this is, so you really there's I guess if I have this correct, basically 10 basic layers. And
You can chunk them in different ways. 10 is a fine number. Yeah, I tried to make it as simple as possible here and just show three or four if you think about the base layer.
but yeah, and you even were good to show that there was really three, because that's the Mesozoic, right, layer, that middle one there, and then the three there, the Cretaceous, Jurassic, and just drew a blank on the other guy, but
Cenozoic. Oh, I'm sorry. Triassic is the first one. Yeah.
okay. So anyways, so you showed how there's like they can be split up in things, but basically like a 10 layer thing. So I've seen a lot, but all 10 layers are actually found in very few places. And actually, if I have this correct here, making up less than 1% of the Earth's surface. And so with that, I would say there should probably be some caution, because there is so little data to draw from still. And it is data that we have, but I think we have to recognize the limitations of it. If I were to drill down in some random places and find certain things, that's not necessarily to say that it's always the same everywhere. Even thinking about like the ocean's crust and thing, you think about how much of the surface that is, and I mean, that's just not practical, right? We're not gonna go down miles below the water and start to drill things and whatnot. Obviously, that's not even practical. It's already extremely expensive to do archaeological digs and whatnot, and getting funding for all that, yada yada. So I just want to just kind of point that out there, that I don't think it's we have to be careful to paint a picture of saying like this is the whole Earth. I think that's what sometimes people get in their heads, but it's really just a representation of some local findings. Is that
So that
fair?
was true. I think I can I actually state back what you're saying just to make sure that I'm doing this right before
Yeah, go ahead.
I jump in. And feel free to say to do the same to me as well. So you're saying that because we don't find all 10 layers in very many spots, we should be careful. What is the thing that we should be specifically careful with?
Just because we have limited data, less than 1% of the Earth's surface has been looked at.
Oh. You're saying that we've only looked at 1% of the Earth's surface to see what layers of rock are there. Is that right? Got it. I don't think that that's true at all. Can I show a different map for this?
Sure, go ahead.
So give me just a second. Here we go. So the oh, here. Let me just tell a story first. So I think that that was true up until the late 1700s in England, where there was a guy, like a workaday laborer named William Smith, who just was really in love with hiking around the country of England and looking at the specific kind of rocks, right? Like everybody's weird in their own way. And he re was the first to recognize, in England at least, that, well, no, probably anywhere in the world of all time, that these rocks, he could predict what colors they were, like when he'd hike in this part of Britain or this part of Britain or whatever. He could predict what colors they were. He could predict what kinds of fossils he would find in them. And so he actually decided to make this map of all of England, the first ever like full geological map of a large area. And he spent his entire life on it, and he published, well, not his entire life, his entire adult life on it. And he published it, and it was a talk of England. Everyone loved it. And then some rich jerks swooped in, made their own map, which happened to look a lot like his, but with cooler colors. And they interestingly did not ever show that they walked all the way around England to go to try to make this sort of thing. So they scooped him. He had copyrighted it, but I guess the copyright wasn't strong enough at the time. And all of like the proceeds for like these maps then like started going to them. And he was put in the poorhouse for this. He couldn't pay for his family. And then finally, near the end of his life, he was recognized like, wait, you're William Smith. Like, you're the guy who figured all of this out. We should like get a stipend for you. And so there's this really good book that I recommend everybody who's interested in this topic read. It's from a library. It's The Map That Changed the World. The birth, William Smith and the Birth of Modern Geology. And you'll see his map in it. Maybe you can just look up William Smith map of England and you'll get it too. But like this, it's like that moment near the end of Return of the Jedi where they're showing the schematics of the new Death Star. And they say, many people have died to bring us this information, right? Like these maps are the heroic invention of people who have really like, spent a lot of time to do this. And so I want to make sure that we are honoring their maniacal contribution to this. And with North America, what we have, anybody can get this, just look up United States, North America geological map or layer map or something like that. And this is the United States Geological Survey who has put this out. And you can see this, and you can see this in better detail than you can see this here. You can find whatever part of the world or sorry, the continent that you live on, you can see it. I've got to tell you, this picture looks like somebody just ate a lot of confetti and then vomited it all over a piece of paper. It's very hard to read. And then like you go to these and you're like, what are these even? What do these colors mean? And so what I've done is I have just stupidly traced these into a much simpler map for this that keeps the same colors as I showed in that other picture. So the recent is the Cenozoic, the Sen and recent, and the Sen and Cenozoic are the same. The middle, Mesozoic, middle. So that's the green is basically the dinosaur time, and then the ancient is the blue time. So you can look at this, or you know, any other map, geological map, and you can see in your own local area, like what layer that you live in. And then Joel, to your point, you can actually go to exactly where the layers change. And I want to give everybody a resource for this. There is a website called rockd, rockd.org, where you can look at any place in the world and you can zoom in. So I'm going to look up Ankeny right now.
How did you say that now? How did you say that?
Yeah, rockd.org. Oh, or do you mean Ankeny? Did I just mispronounce your hometown?
It's okay. It's okay.
Ankeny, I'm sorry.
No, nobody says it right. You can tell when it's like a stranger, like, calling up, wanting your money or, car warranty or something. And, they're like, Unc and I, or, it's funny. No, it's okay. It was some guy's name decades ago. Ankeny. It's okay.
So you can go here, you can find your own place, you can tap on it, and they'll tell you exactly like what layer that you are in. And then if you want, you can like, so the problem with this website is that it uses too many names. It's not simple enough, right? So you have to like look up. I've never heard of the Marowin before. I'd never heard of that before. I did look this up before, but you can look up, you know, Google just Marowin layer and fossils, and then you can see exactly what kinds of fossils other people have found in those layers. And then you can go out to a local fossil site And you can take a look and you can see, do you find those fossils or do you see other fossils? I feel like so much of this, people interpret this as like, oh, like if only I had more book learning, right? Like then I could do this. No, with the information of just like that one website and like Google and like you going out and like looking in some rocks, you can for yourself check what kinds of fossils are in what kinds of rocks. I'm actually interested in launching a contest at some point in the future called Fossil in the Wrong Place, where if anybody can find a fossil that is like radically in the wrong place, like I will give $1,000 to them.
You and your
Because
$1,000 giveaways, I tell you.
well, and they have to
I
buy
am
it
I'm
too.
confident that if it happens, I'll be so excited to find that
Yeah.
I've been so wrong about something that I'll be delighted to give the $1,000 for somebody to somebody for showing me that.
So, I have a question. This may be completely stupid. But if the blue layer is the ancient layer, why is it on the top in some places? It shouldn't it be covered up?
Yeah, this is great. Here, let me pull this back up so we can talk about specific places.
I mean, because if things are laid down by time and then they're covered up by another layer, shouldn't they not be on the top or not? Or am
So
I not understand this right?
that is so exactly the sort of stupid fundamental geological question that I never even started to ask before I started drawing maps like this, right? Like I grew up in Milwaukee, which is, very blue territory, and I like spent my time digging in my parents' backyard in the dirt looking for dinosaur bones. First of all, you're never going to find fossils in just dirt, right? It's like totally off there. Also, like the nearest dinosaur bones to me were very, very far away. No dinosaur bones in possibly the entirety of Wisconsin, although this map is simplified. We have to look at the real map to tell that for sure. Like this is a question that geologists then have to answer. And I'll be frank, I don't know what their exact answer for this kind of opening there. There's two possibilities though. One is that the other layers of rocks were never laid down over there. And that can actually make sense because it's kind of weird for rocks, for like, muck. One of the things that both of our sides agree on is the weird idea that muck gets pressed into rock. That almost all of the rock that we see around us used to be just like dirt or mud or sand or something like that, which is a weird belief. You'd never believe it, except it turns out that both parties totally agree on that part. So maybe it was never laid down there. Or it's that rivers ripped it away. One of the interesting things that I found out specifically looking at Ankeny, how did I do there, Joel?
Better,
Ankeny.
better.
Ankeny, with the long A. Okay.
He's writing
One of
it
the things that I found out by looking at Ankeny is that, let me go over there and then I'll zoom in here.
down. And I appreciate your kindness to want to get it right.
I
That's very
always
kind of
want
you.
to. So you can look at where the, I'm sorry, what's the major river that runs through your area?
There's the Des Moines River.
Okay.
That's
So
all the
you look at the,
Mississippi is on the east side of Iowa.
That's kind of the major river for the whole United States,
Yeah,
though, not
that's
just
well, yeah,
Des
that runs
Moines.
by me too. So you can look at the Des Moines River. Like you see these like weird, like why are the colors so different there? And then you find the river in here. And I bet you can even spot where the river is going to be, right? The river is going to be right here. Well, sorry, this is apparently where the river used to run, right? So where's the river right now? One of the cool things about this is you can find where the rivers seem to used to run because it cuts down. But where? Here, let me use the rivers by my house just because I know that a
Well,
bit better.
just fun fact, we're actually in Cedar Rapids right now, because we're at Nate's special office here.
Here, then let me do. I didn't realize that. Let me do that. So Cedar Rapids, am I right to think that this green stripe right here is the current river that you guys live on?
Yeah, looks like the Cedar River, yeah.
So what's interesting is that when you go and look around the banks there, they're from a different layer than they are from the area above that, which makes sense because the river is, constantly like a knife cutting down into the rock layers. And what you will consistently find is that you find older fossils. This is from my perspective, right? Fossils that belong to an earlier chapter in the history of life next to rivers than you will on like the bluffs around rivers. By my house, there's actually this really cool cliff that I go and hike on sometimes. And the bottom of the cliff is sandstone, and the top of the cliff is limestone. Here's my town. And here's the steeple. Okay, here we go.
And Brandon actually didn't live that far from my aunt and uncle. It's really kind of cool.
Hey, look at my
Yeah,
house.
yeah, yeah. I've met your aunt before. So, like, if you go to this cliff, which I do frequently, and I have some fossils here that I'd love to show, you find really cool stuff at the top of this cliff, really cool fossils here, and you never find any fossils in the bottom of this. Part of that, frankly, is because the bottom is sandstone, and things don't usually preserve as well in sandstone as they
Yeah,
do
they
in
come apart pretty
limestone above
much.
there. But also, like, there's just not as much interesting stuff, not as much big stuff in this in the Cambrian rock, which is the bottom, which is this bottom sandstone, whereas the top limestone is the Ordovician. Can I get just show you guys like one of my favorite things in the world?
Go ahead. Go
Yeah.
ahead.
It's so I go hiking, right, with my daughter sometimes, with my wife sometimes. I look for fossils, and like I'll find, like weird little fossils. Here are some of these weird little clam-like things. You can't even see that on there. They're just so tiny. They're just so tiny. They're not very interesting. But then sometimes I'll find things like this. Joel, have I shown you this at any time in the past?
You didn't show me any fossils yet.
Do you guys guess what this is? I have another one that might be more
Frog.
obvious.
I'm having a hard
Yeah,
time even seeing
hold it
too
up
much
longer.
features there.
Sure. So it's in half right now,
Is that
but
part of
it's
a tree?
round.
That tree?
No, it's not a tree. Great question.
I
Or
can't
sorry,
tell.
great
No.
guess. And you can see little lines across here.
That
It's not a fish, it's a
fish?
squid. It's an
Oh, okay.
armored squid.
I was getting
And
closer.
these things, like you can imagine, like trace these lines, trace these lines. They're going to converge at some point, but they're going to converge like 4 or 5 feet from here. And they went back this way too. These were these armored squid of the sort that hasn't existed for a very long time. These armored, I would say, and we don't find them in recent rock levels. These armored squid that were like, 10 feet, 20, I looked this up recently, I think like up to 20 feet long, that were like the biggest animals in their chapter of life. Like everything else is like this big. And these guys are like the size of a car. These are like Godzilla squid. And they're amazing, and not enough people are talking about them. Sorry, you can see I'm like way too much of a fanboy for these types of squids.
All right. Before we go too much farther, then Joel, do you what is the creationist then idea of
Yeah.
why the layers aren't stacked? Like, why do we only have one layer in some spot, or just the what we call or I
I
guess
you
what we
know
wouldn't call the ancient layer, but what is called the ancient layer versus in other spots where you have all of them.
I gotta tell you, I get in the trap of enjoying listening to Brandon. He's just a fun guy
Yeah,
to listen to. So
he is. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's interesting and fun.
Yeah. I also want to say real quick that what I usually find that we Brandon and I are trying to avoid is that really quick back and forth debate style where it's just I want to win, I want to win, I want to win, I want to make you look dumb, I want to make you look bad, I want to look good. And that's not what we're doing. And very intentionally, I am hearing him out. I want to hear everything. I want to clarify what he's saying. I want to know exactly where he's at before I even respond to it, because that would be very ignorant and foolish of me, and prideful, really, to just say, okay, I got him figured out. I know exactly where he's at. I'm just going to hammer him right now. That's not what we want to do. And so this is more discussion style. You look at this guy, William Smith. I actually had a little tidbit on him, which is really cool that you mentioned him. And he is popular. I found out he's known as the father of biostratigraphy. So like, strata, like
So
the
what does
thing.
yeah, what's that mean?
Yeah, so he's the guy that really got it all started, I think, as Rand was already making clear. Digging up fossils, seeing like, hey, wait a minute here. I'm seeing that there is this kind of life in this kind of layer, And he was making that really popular. And he started to like, index them in a certain order. So we see this, I guess what we call the, faunal succession, fauna being like animal life, so we see that kind of succession. And so really, I can say real quick, just a couple of points of agreement to make sure people know that, we're not going to disagree, we're not disagreeing on everything. Like we do know that, like he said, these layers, they are mostly just like mud and dirt. And then they get mixed with stuff. They harden into rock. And so that we definitely agree on. Brandon even also agrees that not everything is millions of years. There are at least sometimes in some places quick things happening, catastrophes. And so we do agree on those things. I will also say that I'm not in total disagreement that there are certain fossils that you are likely to find in certain layers. I absolutely, like I said before, we are looking at the same evidence. It's our interpretation of the evidence that is different, and possibly the models we're using to explain how that came to be, right? But that's what we want to talk about. But just, real quick, we're not too far from each other yet, not yet. And so we'll see where we get to. But okay, so this William Smith guy, right? He had his principle of final succession. Established an order to the fossils. It allowed geologists to create a global geographic column. Okay. And he did this, in Britain, 1815. He made this first geologic map of Britain. And he established the process of dating rocks. That was a thing back then. But how did he do this? He did it by, it's not all that radioactive stuff, whatever, that super complicated things. He did it by comparing fossils that he found to index fossils discovered earlier in a particular order. And so what people have done, maybe not everybody, but generally speaking, they've taken this principle, and what they'll do is they've used it to establish the geologic time scale. But now there are a lot of them, and I guess I can't throw Brandon into this unless he wants to throw himself into it, but they're establishing this geologic time scale, adding millions of years to this relative order of the geologic column. What would happen is this principle suggests a recognizable order to the fossils, which I am in agreement with. Okay. But I would say that it does not imply evolution or vast amounts of time. It doesn't have to. It doesn't have to. We see an order, and I'm just saying there's more than one way to explain that order. So of course, just to cut to the chase real quick, and then I can go back, but obviously where I'm coming from is I would say it's this global progressive flood that would be used. And if there was this global progressive flood that had all these, earthquakes, tsunamis, things like that, it would be expected to bury these similar fossils from the same environments in about the same order in that rock record. I think it did start from the ground, and so it would be pushing that Cambrian explosion, what we would call the first life. I would say it's actually the first dead from the fossils, or from, I'm sorry, from the flood. That's how I would interpret that. So the tsunamis would be pushing all these things up onto the shore, and so where Brandon very kindly showed you the layers of things. That would be from these systematic tsunamis and other catastrophic things happening, volcanoes and such. That would be pushing up all these huge mudslides and layers. And so you don't have all these neat 10 layers all over the place, exactly, because there's different tsunamis and activity going on in different places. But that quickly added this succession. So it's taking these massive flows of getting the similar animals in the similar environments and putting them up in similar places. That's a lot of speaking, so I'll pause there. And Brand, do you want any questions, any clarifications, anything I just said
Well,
there?
yeah, that's fantastic. Let me make sure that I can clarify this. So you're saying that we see similar animals in similar layers because of the way that the water moving up moved animals into those layers of muck.
Onto
Again,
the shore.
onto the shore in a muck layer, I'm assuming. Because they're in rock, so they're in mud, right? So okay, muck layer in the shore. I like the word muck. I think it's just,
I kind of do too.
I feel like a 6-year-old. Can I ask some questions that I don't understand then how, with that model, how you can explain some of the things that we see in the rock to get your understanding of that? So one of them, let me just pull this up again. My app is loading slowly today, and it keeps resetting itself. So So there's this type of, I'll use one example of this that I know that the three of us have actually talked about, you know, off camera before. There's this certain kind of, I'm going to call it a clam, but it's not technically a clam. It's called a brachiopod. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, brachiopod.
Pod means feet and brachy means forked. I keep looking that root up and I keep forgetting. But it basically looks like a clam. And then up here we have regular clams. You're like, why is this guy talking about clams? Who cares about clams? Nobody cares about clams. They're so boring. But you have these, let me show this one. So the thing that makes brachiopods, whatever, is that they're virtually perfectly symmetrical on both sides. Who cares? I don't. Whereas the clams, mussels, oysters that we have nowadays, for whatever reason, are not that way. The interesting thing is that there's no other difference that I've been able to figure out between these types of animals, right? It's just this random tiny difference. Well, I can go to like any rock quarry or like construction site. On the weekends is the trick to go into construction sites and finding fossils in construction sites. Do it when it's safe. They don't really care. They don't care that you're there. I can find the heck out of a lot of brachiopods near me, but I never find a single clam. And in parts of the country or the world where people live in one of the yellow layers, they'll find all of these clams, but they'll never find a single brachiopod. And I'll point out that that's not like a geographically, like, it's not like one particular like area, right? Like it's like the yellow zones, and they're spread out all the heck around the place. But that pattern holds, so far as I can tell, perfectly. And if anyone found a single brachiopod in one of the yellow or Cenozoic layers, it would be like one of the finds of the year. Like their face would be famous among paleontologists. So I invite anybody to go out there and look for these things because it's possible, right? Like from my perspective, that like a small colony of these things survived somewhere. It's not impossible. It would just be very, very unlikely given that we haven't found it before. But Joel, can you help me understand how you make sense of like the upwelling of the flood making such a fine distinction that it puts brachiopods and Godzilla squid at the bottom all the time, but brings the clams and the saber-toothed cats to the top layers?
Okay, yeah. So essentially, and actually I clicked the wrong button. I want to get back to where I was. I got too many things open at the same time. There we go. Okay, all right. Essentially, I would keep with the idea that with the earthquakes and tsunamis taking up layers, that essentially you are having the same ecosystems being brought up together. And so I would say that just like in the world today a little bit, if you were to look around at different species, so there's different species of clams, right? That's the idea. And so I would say that where we're finding them, that species only existed right there, with that localized ecosystem. And that's my guess. And that's just what I'm working with right now. Why would there, but I think I want to your bigger point, I think, with you saying, hey, look, you got the Triceratops, the T-Rex, the famous cool guys from Jurassic Park, all that stuff right there. And then you're going to find them in the same layers and whatnot. And what you kind of see, and not kind of, I mean, it's pretty wide open that you have this sort of a progression of animal life, right? That's coming up and coming up. So how I would explain that with a global flood, and I really think this is the best possible explanation. But the idea is that when things started going ham, when everything was going crazy, you would have the ocean life didn't have a chance, because that's where it all started, instantly covered. And so then you'd have all these big rumblings, things are moving, water's increasing. And so you would have all life trying to escape danger and run for safety. So the more capable fauna, if you want to put it that way, so this would be perhaps mentally and also physically, okay? There's kind of a mixture there. But as they're able, they have more ability, to escape danger, go to higher ground, things like that, as the flood waters are coming in, the mud flows are coming in. That's the ones you're going to find in the higher layers. And so then you have these, the dinosaur type creatures, as we call them, which that's a whole thing, that term dinosaur, but we'll hold off on that. So, but what we understand is dinosaurs, they would be up higher, being more capable of escaping that danger. And then you go, well, where's all the human fossils? You know, I think that any human fossil that we find is post-flood at this point. And I think the reason for it is because they were the most capable of life to escape danger. And so even at the very end, hanging on to, you know, debris and stuff like that, trying to preserve their life as long as possible. Well, now they're not being trapped under the mud layers, which is absolutely necessary to be a fossil. So if it wasn't trapped, it wouldn't be a fossil. And so then you'd have scavenger fish and things like that that would be eating the remains. And that's why there would not be any of those pre-flood human fossils as well.
Yeah. Can I repeat what I hear you saying and then compliment you on it? So just to boil this down, one of the things that you're advocating is the idea that the dummies are in the bottom and the smarties are in the top. And I love that.
Or at least physically capable, more capable even.
I mean, but also like that they're smarter to do it too. But yeah, the faster, the fasties also, and the slow pokes at the bottom.
That makes the T-Rex.
I love that. How fast can T-Rex run? I love that because it makes an intuitive sense, right? And from my perspective, you actually oftentimes do get like this sort of cognitive advancement as we, you know, like wend our way up into the historical, throughout biohistory. So I love that. The reason that doesn't seem to hold, sorry, is that, tell me how much that was what you were saying.
Just to make sure, just point of clarification, I'm not sure if you had it or not, but with the bottom layer, the ocean, it was more of surprise being where it all started. And that's why it would capture the whole ecosystem. That's why in the Cambrian explosion, you even have a whole ecosystem, but it's all like the ocean stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a clarifying point, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think no, hold on. I want to make sure I don't miss this. Okay. Can you restate that in just a sentence?
What we see in the Cambrian explosion, parentheses, which is the bottom layer. Thank you for that.
In the bottom of the bottom layer, yeah.
Thank you. That would be representative of those that were hit first and taken by surprise. It's a large enough area that it took a whole ecosystem even. That's why the Cambrian explosion, I know it's more than a sentence, I couldn't do it.
No.
The Cambrian explosion would have like a whole ecosystem. And even, soft jellyfish and things is really interesting, but nothing else. Only those ocean floor type creatures.
Sure. So, and that makes, I love that explanation too. Makes an intuitive sense of something that we see. I love it. Where I guess, so then help me understand why, if the stuff near the top is the stuff that is smarter, faster, that sort of thing. Why are the majority of fossils that we find up here things like clam shells and mussel shells and, you know, bugs and whatever? I feel like we find different kinds of clam shells, right, in all of these layers. I don't know what kind we find in the middle. Yeah. And they're almost identical to each other, except these little differences. But they're always exactly in their order. We find bugs, right, in all of these layers, and they're always bugs, but you know they're different, and you can predict what they're going to be like by their layer. Help me understand how the upwelling would explain, I guess, just clams in all of those layers.
Yeah, I guess as just a simple way of talking through it would be simply that you have a lot going on all over the earth at once.
Mm-hmm.
So you have colliding things, you have sliding things.
Mm-hmm.
As we see those 10 layers, essentially, The big ones, you know, the mega sequences is how we would refer to those things, and how we see those things moving. You would see that it could take up clams from, you know, going off camera, you know, but taking clams from over here, and well, over here has already been layered a few times. We got now this stuff's being washed up and getting mixed up. I think clams easily, because they're all over the ocean, you have like what, of all the fossil record, 95% of the fossil records like clams and plant life, you know, essentially.
Very boring. Yeah.
That's all it is. So it's all over, because I think largely the global flood was coming from the bottom of the ocean, if not the subterranean depths, all pushing things up and exploding. So you even have volcanoes and things where things are being pushed way up and then coming down. And so there's lots of action of geysers, volcanoes, all sorts of stuff that's mushing things around. I think the clams very easily just hopped around everywhere. I think your natural question next would be, well, why just clams? Why not move everything else around?
Let
Maybe.
me can I try to re restate what you're saying?
Go ahead.
So you're saying that clams didn't live in the same place. Clams didn't live on the ocean floor. These other sorts of symmetrical clams, the brachiopods, that they lived on the ocean floor. Is that the hypothesis here?
I think, well, there's, I mean, there's, I'm not sure exactly where they all would have been, but I would assume that clams were everywhere. The brachiopods specifically, I'm open to the idea of those only being in a certain part as a certain species, only being in a certain part of the earth, which is why they would only be in a certain part of the fossil record. Which is true for, you could say that with really any of the fossil record. Because you look at the Earth today, even just because an animal exists doesn't mean it exists in an even population over every part of the Earth.
Yeah. You had mentioned that kind of idea before, and I'm going to draw a different picture here. You had said maybe the animals just lived in different areas. And of course, animals live in different areas, right? Polar bears do not live at the equator, penguins do not live at the North Pole, that sort of thing. So we should expect to find different kinds of animals in different kinds of areas. And in fact, right, we do. Like T-Rexes did not live in South America, right? We had a different kind of like giant meat-eating dinosaur that lived in South America and Africa. T-Rexes lived in North America and part of Europe, I think. I might be wrong about that. I guess it's important for us to say that what we find, maybe this is not so much a response to you as to another friend of mine when I was talking about this sort of stuff.
Okay.
He said, well, I think that like we find these things in different layers because they lived in different areas. And I th he was de doing that in a simpler way than you are. He was like spitballing this idea, right? When he and I were talking, it was a fun conversation. I think it's important to note that what we find is not this. Second, give me a green here. It's not this where we find just different animals living in different areas, but it's primarily that we find them in different horizontal layers. So even on the same hill, right? Like I can expect to find, if I see a break in the hill, right? I can expect to find different fossils at the top than I do at the bottom of the hill. But I apologize because I feel like that's not a direct response to anything that you've just said, but maybe an important idea for us to keep in mind all the same.
I'm trying to track with you, and so I just want to make sure, I just want to make sure there's clarity here. So what I would be proposing is, yeah, definitely horizontal layers, and I would expect the same things in those layers, because it's the same part of that big hydraulic force that pushed up all the muck, because we love that word. And so it would push the muck, it would gather what's there. It push it up. You would essentially, the global flood, even though there's lots of different things happening in lots of different places, it all began at the same time, though. It wasn't like it started in different places. And so I think that's why there is an element of time here. I don't want to act like I'm ignorant of this, because obviously I would say the things on the bottom were layered first, and then the things on the top were layered last, you know, out of the 10, you know, the 10 layers, basically. I'm totally aware of that kind of thing. I'm just saying that it all happened within, basically a year. That's my big argument.
I appreciate your fine-tuning of it's not that I'm saying it took that these represent different times and you're saying it's not. I'm saying it took that these layers represent different like chapters, different like very far distant times. That's not an exactly correct phrase, but like a lot of different time that spans those differences. Whereas you're saying it represents time, but in a much more fine-tuned and over a much shorter scale. I appreciate you saying that. I think that I feel like the best response for me in this is to say that is to get more specific because I feel like I tried to argue that point back when I was a young Earth creationist. And then as I learned more and more about different types of animals, like I just like it overwhelmed my ability to have to imagine some sort of simple sorting process in a flood or even a complex sorting process as doing it. Can I give you one example of that right now with sharks?
Please go ahead.
So I invite all of us and everybody watching this to just Google prehistoric sharks. I did not know when I was a kid just the weird kinds of sharks
There's some
that
weird
used
stuff out
to
there.
like this, just like this by itself, right? Note the claws or something and it's pectoral fins. I you know what? I haven't even seen that before. Maybe someone's just making that part of it up. But like the shark with the buzzsaw mouth, right? This is we find multiple fossils of this. It's a shark, and we find right lots of weird different sharks. Everybody loves to draw the ball shark, the buzz one. They're sharks. We know that they live, like in the ocean. some sharks can live at the bottom. Some sharks can live at the top. It's a living one right now. But help me understand how you make sense of the fact that we find not only all the things we've been talking about, but also like weird sharks. Oops, wrong color. Weird sharks at the bottom and normal sharks at the top.
Sure. I guess as an opening thing, I would say we always have to be a little bit careful when we're looking at computer-generated images, because if we're only finding bones, we do have to be careful. I would say, quick commercial for dinosaurs and stuff too. If you were to just find like a skeleton of an elephant, for example, never having seen an elephant, you would get like a million things wrong, the tail, the ears, they even walk on their tippy toes. I mean, the feet would be totally wrong. You'd probably mess up the the trunk and whatnot. The skin, how would you know that? Or the amount of fat, the cartilage, So I do try to caution with the computer generated images to say, well, what exactly would that look like? I think it's awesome to use our imaginations. I think it's awesome to say this could be it, and I think that's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy that too. But I do want to caution against it. Okay. But I'm not disagreeing that there is weird looking stuff that used to exist that no longer exists as well. Absolutely. And I think that's a really fun thing to investigate as well. And so, okay, your question though, you have weird looking sharks at the bottom, you have normal looking sharks at the top. And I think that we're only making that distinction though, too, because we're used to the ones at the top, right? There's stuff that we've grown up seeing. We all love, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, and Shark Week and all that. That's really cool stuff. Megalodon. Okay, anyways, but so you have these weird looking guys at the bottom. Well, I would just stay consistent and just say they happen to be the ones that were at the bottom of the ocean and got trapped up with those guys. And then the ones that higher up, a lot of them did get trapped in some mud. With all the forces, but not all of them. And so whatever was left would breed and come out with what we have. And even if there was some of those old ugly ones, they could have even been hunted to extinction. It could be that what was left, because the shark is a shark, they can still breed. And so it could be that there's been the certain genetic characteristics eventually were totally lost just over time. I would also point out that the ocean is largely undiscovered. So it's totally possible that somewhere we would have some of these somewhere. And I'm not saying there are. I'm just saying that
We both agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
Definitely possible.
Yeah. Coelacanth. Absolutely.
There's a lot of those.
It's rare, but I hope that it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so this was brought up before, and I just want to bring it up now because it's kind of with what we're talking about. It was already brought up, and I don't want to forget again because I've already forgotten like 10 times. but you were mentioning before, well, obviously this whole talk is about how there's certain things in certain layers, right? Mm-hmm. Certain things in certain layers. I just wanted to point out, and I think you're already familiar with this, but let's talk about it. And something called anomalous fossils. And so I would assume you're familiar.
Let's pretend that I'm not.
Okay. All right. No problem at all. So that'd be like anomalous, because this is kind of a new word for me. I've heard of this kind of thing before, but I didn't know the word. So anomalous fossils. So it's exactly kind of what you're saying, where there's a certain fossil order and everything normally fits. But once in a while, there is a fossil that's found completely out of that order. Sorry, say it again.
Can you give examples? This is fantastic.
All right. Well, that wraps up that episode and kind of left there with a little teaser, a little cliffhanger there.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
So how do you say that word again, Joel?
Anomalous.
Anomalous.
Anomalous fossils.
So we will come back next episode with anomalous fossils, and we're going to get right into that.
Right away, Brandon starts. It's exciting.
He offers a reward. So
yes.
You have to check back and see what it is.
Money's involved.
Lots and lots of money.
Love it.